You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
And tonight, we are...
Hey, Queens, what's going on? It has been one hot minute since I've had one of my Aussie gals on the podcast. So we are cracking it 2 weeks in a row. Carla Gare this week and then Lauren Hunter next week. But this week, I am really pumped to chat to Carla. She is an amazing soul, an amazing human being. And we have a really good chat about Six Life, what COVID has been like in Australia, everything from top to bottom. You're going to find it right here during this episode, guys. Make sure you are subscribing, leaving a review if you can to the podcast. This is episode 43 now. Incredible. And as always, every episode we've done this and it is time to get down. Here we go.
I'm the queen of the castle. Get down, you dirty rascal. Get down.
Hey, Queens, and welcome back to the Queen and Podcast. We are back down under this week with our Boleyn. Hey, Carla, how are you going?
I don't know why that's so funny. It makes me laugh.
it's only the third time that I've got to say it. So, like, I'm going to milk it.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. Your podcast has reached so far. It's awesome. Gosh,
it's incredible. Awesome. Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. Let's start off with a fun one, though. You have a choice between a plain Freddo frog and a caramella koala. What are you picking?
Oh, I have to go caramella koala. I love caramella. Right. Yeah, I do.
out of all your own songs, and we'll dive into this later, what's your favorite to perform?
Oh, to perform. Nice. Yeah. Question. I think the most euphoric experience that I've had has actually been in a song I did on my second gig called Every Breath I Take, which I will be changing the title of that song because already existing. So I think it might just be Breath I Take to not cramp on Sting style.
Goddamn Sting, get in the way of our creative process.
But yeah.
I love your musical style. So what was your musical inspirations is essentially my question.
Yeah, for sure. I think that I would be lying if I didn't say it was influenced by what I've been listening to at the time. Like, I will listen to a certain style and then find the next song that comes out does have influences of that, which I think is really cool. And means that a lot of my music does call upon quite eclectic styles, which I love. But I definitely do. Emily King is a huge influence, and she really kind of, when I heard her sound, it was the first kind of artist that I resonated with their like entire vibe, but also she didn't have any, they weren't all straight pop songs. She had instrumentals, she had really short songs, she had songs that was just a chorus that would loop, and it really opened my eyes to like, hey, music can be whatever.
Yeah.
And she's
not
in
a set
the only
structure
person.
Of totally. Chorus. Yeah.
Yeah. And she, again, no way the only person doing this in the music scene. And that's like extensive to classical every style ever. It was just the first artist, happened to be a woman as well, who I connected with, and on that I was like, oh damn, there's so much more freedom here.
Yeah.
And that set off a chain reaction of like, ooh, I can have shorter songs, and that's where the prayers came from, and these songs that really were, I love the imagery of like, the song is out there and I am at a certain point in my life where I can access what I need to be a vessel to express that.
Yeah.
So she really kind of unlocked that, helped me find the words to describe that.
Sick. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. And we're going to touch on the album later. So we'll circle back around. Heading to a zoo, what's your go-to animal to go see?
You did say zoo, right? You did. Zoo.
Yeah.
I had Zoom. I was like... Oh, go-to animal at the zoo. My mind went to the meerkats. But I do feel like the lions are pretty magical as well.
Yeah.
Oh, the zoos are great, but also zoos are so it's a half and half, because being in the presence of the animal is like wow, but also like, especially there are zoos, some zoos in Melbourne are pretty restrictive for the animals. Yeah. It's just a bit sad to see them like that.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
Theatre. Let's dive down. Hello, that's what we're here for. If you weren't aware, we do talk about theatre and Six the Musical on this podcast, so strap in. How did you get into the performing arts? What was your introduction to this world?
To the performing arts? My parents, they are both performers themselves and both teachers as well of music and voice, and at some point instruments as well. And I grew up like music was just another language in the house. They were both opera singers as I was growing up. Like they actually met at the university that I trained at, which is
that's cool.
Wild. Back when it was a night course. I know, it's like when I would perform at Grant Street Theatre, which was there when they were there, they'd always be like, oh wow, look at what they've done to the place. Hell kid. But yeah, so I lived in this environment where performing was never seen as inaccessible or something that wasn't sustainable, and it was always encouraged. I was heavily supported, which really, really lucky and grateful for that. So yeah. It was just always around. Yeah.
Yeah, sick. Was VCA your first and only choice, or did you audition for the other two?
I did audition for the other two, but VCA was absolutely my tippy top for sure. Yeah. And I did not get accepted into the other two. I believe Whopper said I was too young and I should come back the year after. And BAPA, I think I got into like their, they had a, I seem to remember letters as in like ABCD. And there was a certain, whether they equated to a waiting list. Speaking of VCA, I didn't get into VCA straight out. They had a foundation program, which unfortunately they don't run anymore, which is so sad. But I got into the foundation program and then was bumped up to the waiting list and then bumped into the course. So it wasn't a smooth sailing, yes, you are in VCA. Yeah. But thank God.
And for all those UK people listening, VCA is like one of our equivalents of like Guildford and that type of thing, just
yeah, in Melbourne. Struggling. In Melbourne. Yeah.
Great. So, Queen, how did you find out about Six? Where did
how did it? It was just a brief that was going round. Though, funny story, I was in the UK before the brief came to Australia,
yeah,
and I was shoving my face with every show I could see, of course. I saw Company on that trip and my brain
was that they're like the new one that's just transferred to Broadway where yeah. I absolutely have,
but like sitting, I was incredible seats, four rows from the front, directly in the middle, and oh my God, Patti LuPone is singing Ladies Who Lunge, and I'm just sat there with tears streaming down my face because there's just some, like, you can feel her presence on that stage. And the entire cast was insane. Like, it was such a, that was my favorite production I saw the entire trip. But, oh, and she looked at me because I'm pretty sure she saw that I was struggling. And, but it wasn't a look of like, are you okay? It was more a look of like, I know so many people. I'll take that. But I did the whole like I was going to the ticket booth thingy near the M&M place. I can't remember this, but I had the option of seeing Six or Caroline or Change, and would you believe I saw Caroline or Change? So I didn't even see it. And then when it came here, it wasn't as if I had this like, I saw this show and I really want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
But I had totally seen all the buzz that was around like with the Olivier performance and just how like their West End Live thing they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, those I'd seen. I was like, this is epic. What is this? And also, as an unemployed artist, when you get a brief, it's a very nice thing to be like, okay, there actually is a spot here for me, and this is a job. This is cool. I need that.
So getting the brief, going into auditions, what was your audition process like? How, from your point of view, what did you go through?
Yeah, I actually, funnily enough, had to, so they asked you to send through a full-length photo and your headshot when you got the brief before actually going through the auditions. And I funnily enough needed to get a full-length photo for something else and was looking back over my emails that I sent through to my agent at the beginning of Six when the brief first came through. And when I was like, hey, have you heard of this thing? I think I'd be really great. He was like, yeah, of course, we've put you through. I'm a very forward-speaking client in terms of like the second anything happens. I'm like, agent, did you know about this? Which... it's a fine quality. Anyway, and I was looking back and there was just a moment where he asked, yeah, great. And do you see anyone in particular that you'd like to be put up for? And I was like, yes, please. Anne Boleyn. And it was just lovely to read that. And then with this experience, be like, oh my God, that was way back before any of this. Wow. But the audition process for me was they sent us materials to learn. It wasn't about picking songs. They gave us a list actually, and each song kind of equated one of the queens.
Yeah.
And so I picked the one that was most Boleyn. I absolutely auditioned with a London accent because I thought that was it, and then got in the room and sang Bang Bang very well and with a pretty good accent. But they were like, "That great, but can you do it in the Australian accent?" And it threw me so bad.
It's only in my head in that accent. I can't.
I'd put that in it that way.
But and it's so weird for us too, because like when we sing, like it's very rare that we instinctively go to the Australian accent to sing. Australian. It's either American or British or something. We adapt.
Totally. I will say now I do, because Six has taught me that. And I love that point of difference and that point of this is my accent. But before that, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so that was weird. But yeah, the first thing was also, I don't think it was singing first. I believe it was a dance call first. And they asked us to wear heels. So a lot of us were wearing booties that are not really like dancer booties. They're like booties. But that was you choose your own adventure there. And I think we learnt on the first one, I think it might have been Get Down. The do-do-coo in the first chorus.
Yeah.
And they made us strut down the room. That's right. They made us go, they put Beyonce on and they made us strut. And I think that was their first kind of inkling of seeing who can just do it, who can release the fear and all that and just be present, but also who can support from the sidelines, because the supportive quality was a big continual theme throughout the audition for sure. And so then the numbers slowly diminished as they cut people from that. Then it was singing, and then cut people from that, call back dancing again, and we learnt I believe No Way and All You Want to Do. No Way was final callback. It gets a bit blurry.
It was so long ago. It was nearly a year ago.
So much content. I don't know about as a performer or any performers listening. The content, like, that is such a high pressure, like, soak as much as you can in environment, but then it just gets dumped at the door. Like, they asked us to retain. They were like, oh, we're going to do Get Down again. And I was like... But they completely understand that, and they're like, great, step one. But it was they were so welcoming. And Freya, I remember our resident choreographer, Freya was teaching us, and I just remember being like, how do you move your body like that? Yeah. That style is so good on her. She knows how to work it. Yeah. Yeah, that was the process pretty much. Oh, one of the big things that a lot of people, like, this is where Six kind of differed and was kind of the first time I'd done this, was the very final callback, which I'm not sure if you know much about, but we had to do our individual. They got us, like, so for example, those doing the Berlin material, those doing the Cleaves material, they were benched together because they're kind of the, I guess, the looser, funnier queens in that regard, in the audition regard. And we had to, all of the people going for that sung in front of each other. We kind of became the audience, which was another really wonderful test, I guess, to see who can set their material aside and be present and be an audience member, be a supportive person.
Yeah.
Which was sneaky because it was terrifying to kind of have this material that you've prepared that everyone else in the room has prepared as well. But it was wonderful to then, as you're doing it, like, see how different everyone's was.
Yeah.
Even though the exact same material, not one person made the same choice as someone else because the material asked of your interpretation.
Yeah.
And it was so refreshing to be like, oh, I see why your job as a casting panel is so hard, because it's totally people. There is not one element of the physical that is required. It comes down to what you bring as a human. And I was like, more theater like that. That's amazing.
Right. And like, the more I talk to, like, it, that same thing is like cast across the world. Everyone's like, it's so different. I'm like, that's how it should be, really. Like, let's be honest. Yeah. but yeah, it's so good.
And I mean, also this story doesn't fall under the need. It's not a cultural story that's being told.
Yeah.
So, and that does then open it to being anybody and being about a person rather than needing to have an authentic telling of a story in that regard.
Yeah. So getting the call, Carla, you're in.
You're going to laugh.
Okay. That's why I asked it.
I was at Chadston Shopping Centre, and I had a missed call from my agent, classic. And I, it was one of those moments where I hadn't forgotten about Six, but I was like, it wasn't you look at the phone and you have a gut instinct. I was just kind of like, oh, should call you back. And I was getting into my car, and the bastard was like, oh yeah, how you going? Yeah, he sounded a little melancholy. I was like, oh, this is one of those calls.
Just great. A courtesy, like.
And I'm like, I think I must have my headphones in. So I was like trying to get into the car. And as I'm like on my trajectory to sitting down, he's like, we just wanted to let you know that you've been offered the role of Anne Boleyn. And I've literally sat down and it's like, what the fuck? Like, crazed in this car park by myself. And that's happened. I've had like two major calls of like these role, like things that have been quite life-changing. The other one was VCA, when I got the call saying, you're bumped up from waiting list, you're now into the course. I was by myself again at home, and I distinctly remember being like, I don't know how to deal with this. Oh,
I could just see you like sitting in a car park, just slamming on your horn, just like, yes!
Not the horn, but definitely like, and what was hilarious was, of course, can't tell anyone, confidential, like to the nth degree. I was even like, can I tell my family? I don't even know if I can. And I was seeing a show that night. I was seeing my friends perform in The Beautiful Game at Chapel of Chapel. And I was sitting there, and I would just keep going, like having these waves of remembering this information that I had just received, but being like, watch the show. Like, just watch this show. And it was the funniest, like no one else knew what was going on, but I was pissing myself in my chair being like, this is hilarious. And I took myself out dancing afterwards because I was like, I need to celebrate and I can't tell anyone about it. So I'm just going to find strangers at a club and dance with them and tell them I got a really big job, but they don't know anything about it. That is exactly what I did.
I love that. So let's chat quickly about the next couple of months. You get the call and then the Australian Sherlock Holmes party comes to the thing and the Queendom tries to figure out who the nine of you are. So what was that like seeing everybody? Because going back through my account, it's really funny now because I think you tagged Vidya in a comment on one of my posts, like, I think it was something like 3 weeks before the announcement was made. And I was like, okay, all right. So what was it like seeing everyone like piece things together and slowly like.
It was it was fascinating because it was this whole new world of like such a wide community and such a huge community of people that were like, that were so interested in knowing who we were and watching people piece it together and like people like yourself who were bang on. I was like,
I think I got like 7 out of 9 and I was like, I'm close enough. I'm pretty sure I got like the main 6. So we'll just run with that.
But yeah, it was still disconnected. Like we could be looking on without the attachment of we had the anonymity.
Yeah.
But then like, I remember I was with Kiana when it got dropped and though that like that 24 hours was insane. Queendom is amazing, but just this, the volume of attention suddenly and like, woo, it was a drop. It was amazing. Yeah. It was like, what the hell? Like this, as in just this side, like, no one really prepares you for that. There isn't really.
Yeah.
And also within like, it's not really the MT industry. It's more moving into the 6 world of that fandom. Like it's a real proper like universe within itself. And it's 100%. Like, damn, you're a part of this. And it's huge.
So then that happens. Everything explodes on social media. Mm-hmm. And you guys go into like that little, there was like a little media thingy and then rehearsals started. So what was it like hearing everything kind of come together on that first read through? And
it was, the first read through was so sweet. It was really inclusive in the sense that we read the script and it was amazing to hear people's like line reading, but every song, the creatives were adamant that everyone who was sat around the table had to sing. So we had our directors, we had our crew, we had our stage managers, like the producers were singing these songs. And it was like, that was a real kind of checking point of like, these people rock. Like, what a cool thing this is that I'm now part of. And it's had slowly kind of started seeping in that like, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And that, and it was also like, just so such a feel good to hear, like Kiana's one of my closest friends and to hear her reading these lines and injecting herself in this character and being like, oh my God, I like, that's you, but you as Cleves, but it's so you. And this is this thing that we're now part of this. It was just,
that was that's it. That sums up the whole experience. So going through the rehearsals, what was it like trying to find yourself in Anne? How did you go about finding your character?
Yeah, that's a great question. There was it was really funny because it was so simple, but in its simplicity, I feel like this is with anything when it is so simple, it's like there's so much more room to fall into, but it must be harder than this. There's the kind of deceptive thing of get like a few of us fell into the meta, like it's me, but I wouldn't say that, but you want that of me playing her, but those lines that she's saying, I wouldn't say that. But yeah. So then how do I bring myself to things that I wouldn't say, but being the best qualities of myself as Berlin? And it kind of, there was like the potential to fall into that.
Yeah.
But there, I remember the direction Grace had, like, there were really specific ways of saying things and jokes, especially because they were very suited to an English accent and an English person's inflections.
Yeah.
And so for us to find how it sat with an Australian inflection and understanding and accent, that kind of took a bit longer.
Yeah.
And in fact, some things were changed. I remember when Lucy came in, I can't remember what line it was, but she changed one of my lines because she was like, that doesn't work with the Australian and I like where you're going, let's do this instead. And I wish I could remember, because I was like, oh my god, Lucy changed this for me. but yeah, so that was cool. And I think if, yeah, it was easiest when I would just do the task of kind of removing myself, as in being like, I'm playing a bigger version of Carla.
Yeah.
It was more, I think I looked at it more as though I'm playing Berlin, but the characters that, the qualities that Berlin has is all like, for example, with a character I could do same as me, different as me.
Yeah.
List to help me find things about them. But I would just take the same as me list and like put those qualities in her, I guess, if I'm kind of trying to break that down. So it was, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I didn't really delve into the meta of it as much, and that helped. But again, it was a hole that could have been fallen into very easily, for sure.
Yeah.
Mm. But I think also there was, I saw it as a freedom to kind of just be on that stage, and there was a structure within these lines and within the comedy of it and the technique of the comedy so that those jokes landed. But there was also this freedom that came with it being so close to the self.
Yeah.
And that was, I love that. Love me some freedom on a stage.
So acting's a third of the show and a third of the hardest part. Let's jump into the choreography, because that's what's my question here, folks? There's so many. Okay, let's start with, what was the hardest part for you to wrap your head around choreographically?
Choreographically, I think the hardest song was All You Want to Do, because it was so bitsy and there was so much, the choruses especially were very similar, except would have like one difference. And there were many a night where everyone would be going in and I would be freaking out. But yeah, they were, that was, and that asked for a lot of precision as well. So that one, that was a good brain kind of remembering where you are.
Yeah.
And I think the No Way Dance Break was, No Way was energetic. Like that was a workout, especially that, the dance break in that song.
Yeah.
But it was so fun as well. They all had their challenges. Get Down was sassy as heck and felt really like cool to be that low and connected to the earth.
Yeah.
Didn't really do much in Seymour's.
Sit there, smile, stand up, harmony, woohoo, we're good.
Feel it, really feel it. And oh God, did we, like sitting there, Lauren every night,
oh, seeing that man, and every night she got to that note, I was like sitting there like, I'm gonna cry. This is it. Like, oh God.
Yeah. Incredible. And every night. Yeah. Beautiful. And I'm just trying to and videos. Yeah. And then going into Mega Six and all the funkies. Yeah, I'd say technically all you want to do was hard.
Yeah.
But the whole show, I think the hardest thing of the whole show is that it's kind of written, and I say this all the time, but it's written to have energy at 100%.
Yeah.
Even when you're a backer or even when you are doing like more subtle movements, the energy of it is like has to be up there. And it's to the point where it's like, even if you're at 75, it just, the actual movements don't look as good. And it looks like you can, it's so clear that you're marking or,
yeah,
or even if you're not marking, just slightly under becomes so noticeable.
Yeah.
I think it might be because there is only six of you on stage and there is space to see everything and you're wearing these epic costumes and like, everything is heightened. So if you're not matching that, it's obvious.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, Kyla Gear.
Look at that.
Yeah. I had the pleasure of watching the show. I think around near the end of the show. And it was when Karis went on for Berlin.
I think I was I there that night? Yeah, I was there that night.
Yeah.
That was, that was so good.
Yeah. But it was like, it was so, I was the moved doesn't even begin to cover it. Watching it and like seeing what you're all seeing and then noticing like on stage what feels too big. But then when you look at it from the audience, it's like, oh my God, no, that's the vibe.
Yeah.
And the like, electricity exuding from that stage, yeah, and how powerful everything and everyone is. It was just like, holy crap, what am I a part of?
Yeah,
this is amazing. And the I remember that being a real like pick me up because I think it was near the end of the season and the show, especially we did 9 shows a week.
Mm-hmm.
It was really hard to find a groove of groove of recovery, I guess. Like it was only within maybe the last 2 weeks that I felt like I could do life outside of recovering and preparing and doing the show, just because it was such a toll, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually on the body.
Yeah. There's like people are like, it's just a 75 minute show. I'm like, yeah, but it's 75 minutes full out nonstop. Like it's not
totally. And it's like barely leaving the stage. And like I said, the energy is just written in. Has to be constant. And also we had two show days. That was a kicker. That was hard to get
through. When I saw the schedule come out, I was like, whoa, this is a lot. Like usually it's like maybe like a Wednesday, Saturday, 2 show and then like a 1 show Sunday. And then, but like,
yeah, that's usual for sure.
Yeah.
But and that wasn't going to continue as we went on in the season. They just had 9 shows for Sydney because it was a much smaller venue.
Yeah.
But that was a struggle to navigate. And Monday was then sacred.
In the rehearsal room, what was it like for you doing the whole show full out for the first time?
Oh, amazing. It was wildly bizarre. I don't know if you've seen like the photos of my makeshift little buns as an attempt to figure it out. My hair was also so much longer. I had it, they asked if they could cut it because it was like, I'm going to say like longer than this and just, it was going everywhere and it would get caught in the buns even without the little spiky things.
Yeah.
And they were like, I'm just going to take a precaution, which is I think going to help. But I'm doing it with the skirts for the first time and the introduction of a microphone because as the Corey was taught, we had the microphones, of course, because the Corey mic is just as important. Like, when we freaking changed it, am I singing here? And then suddenly, like, where, like, it had to be, it was just as important as every other thing, which was cool. Felt like a rock star. Absolutely. Yeah. But it was a mind games. It was huge mind games. But that, yeah, that moment, and also like the swings were rehearsing, I believe. Oh, I think the first time we ran it, actually, they sat in the audience and supported. Ooh, it's a little bit blurry, I'm not going to lie. But producers came in and we had the creative team, and it was pretty wild to put it all together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So something that's rare for Australian productions is working with the writer of a show, especially like an international show. So what was it like to have Lucy and also Joe, who was there from the early days, come out and work with the people that actually kind of created the show?
Insane. The stories that Joe would tell us about, like, him being there for that Edinburgh Fringe, and like the whole process of selecting which show they would take to the Fringe and meeting a young Lucy and Toby and just sitting there like, oh my God, this is totally applicable, like, to the shows that have come out of like a uni close to me, like a friend of mine, or these people are like, I believe Joe's 23.
Yeah. He's not much older than us.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what? It's just insane. And for him to, he's also the most kind, compassionate, intelligent, like, he knows the craft and the show so well and is so like brilliant in his knowledge and teaching of the material, but also just of the voice. Like, I would love him as a vocal teacher. He seems wonderful. But and the sweetest human as well. And then Lucy was just ridiculous. Like, she came in and she just, the first thing she said, she was like, my kids. And they're all like, oh my God, you look like a friend of mine. Goodness. And it just, it's a testament to her friendliness and her generosity. I feel like that's a quality that actually everyone connected to Six has. It's so generous. Yeah. Of love, of joy, of friendship, of connection, of great things. And she was so at first she was, you know, very friendly and very kind, but then when it got to work, it was like, great, okay. And never in no way harsh, but it was just, we're working now. And it was so empowering to see a woman stand there working on her material across the country and just freaking being awesome. Like, so incredibly... again, similar to Joe, like, incredibly compassionate, but completely intellectually brilliant. She just knew exactly how to get what she wanted out of us, which is an incredible skill to have as a director, especially with people that you don't really know.
Yeah.
Like, to be able to speak to them and to make them feel comfortable. I mean, we were all very starstruck as well. That takes a brilliant director, and it was like, you're a writer and you're a director and you're freaking killing it.
Yeah.
I was very inspired. Very, very inspired.
We've touched on pretty much the whole creative team, so we might as well keep going. Moving into the Opera House, you then get Tim and Paul join the crew to do sound and lighting. So what was it like kind of working with them and staging the show for the audience?
Yeah. I mean... It was the entire, like, experience of moving into the Opera House was its own, like, whoa. And that theater, I've worked in that theater before, but that theater is so, it's a chameleon. Like, it can move into anything ever.
I had never been in there before. And I walked in, the first time I walked through the doors, I was like, Oh shit. Yeah. Okay. All right. Like, you didn't even have to get downstairs. You just walked in and you were like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. And it was, they'd like a comparison to the show I was in last time, which was literally just a stage and then the red seating. And then this like almost like stadium esque vibe in this theater. It was like, oh my God. And the Opera House, like walking to work every day was ridiculous. But working with the UK creative team, the crew was so, like, I remember when we walked in and it wasn't quite set up, that all the lights were going in and everything, and it was they were so generous again with us and with the introductions and meeting everyone. And it was around New Year's, I believe, and we all went and saw the fireworks on the harbour afterwards. And everyone was so nice. And so nice to share that with them, especially we were all away from family.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was the chapter of moving in and then meeting everyone else attached to it and putting faces to names. I believe they were at the first one though, because they were part, like our very first rehearsal, we met everybody that was attached to it. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get an audience in, let's talk about The Green and working with Nigel to get... I love everyone's reaction when I bring up costumes, guys. Like, just watching everyone's face when you're like, let's talk about this. They're like, yes. So what was it like working with Nigel and his team to bring The Green to life?
Oh, yeah. Crazy. Insane. Because it's so specific and it's so it's entirely your own, and that's inclusive of alternates and swings, but it's entirely made for you, and it's this epic monstrosity of a costume, this powerful like suit of armor, and the plastic, like, I remember Nigel telling me about how hard it was to work with that material.
Yeah.
But kudos to them all, because they don't tell anybody else, but apparently the Aussie costumes were pretty, pretty good. Pretty tick of approval from head honchos. Get it, Nigel. But yeah, and the boots. Like Nigel had, he fought really hard to get us Ladukas for the show, which thank God I heard about, I heard awful stories about working in shoes that were not supportive and doing that show, like having the weight taken off us of potentially being in really unsupportive shoes, like being able to do the show in those boots was a godsend, because I heard about some productions where they were using, like, I don't know, the equivalent of a Kmart boot here.
Yeah.
And it was, I just could not imagine getting through all of that and being in them for 75 minutes and doing all of that chore and singing the way you have to sing and moving the way you have to move without that support down the bottom. So that was a thank gosh.
Shout out to Ladukas for being a good supportive shoe. We got you.
Yeah, Ladukas and Nigel.
Right. Yeah. Wow. So show gets teched, costumes are in, hair and makeup's in, lighting's in, sound's in.
Mm-hmm.
And we start off with a 2-show day.
Oh God, I can't even remember.
That's all right. Yeah, I got you back because I was there for both of them. let's flash it back, because like you were the first person that I actually met out of the cast, and it was on your way in. See, now we're throwing it back.
yep.
That day was like, what was it like? That whole day was just crazy. Like,
yeah,
what was it like having people in there and reacting and screaming at the top of their lungs, like, just to see you guys on stage?
I'm trying to remember the very first show, and I cannot, but I can remember the audience is like the seventh queen. It is the audience is just as important. The what makes the show run fast and what makes the show seem to go faster for us is the, like, if the audience gives back what the queens are putting in and the energy is met in the middle, the show goes boof, and like that's a give and take and giving and receiving, and the show just flies. And it becomes like it's raised to a place that it couldn't have gone without the audience. And that's what we were missing in the rehearsal room. Cause like by the time you get to the seventh time we're running the full show, our limited members of audience are like, oh yes, I've heard that joke seven times, you know? And also like coming in with these beautiful people who are so excited to see what we've done and to experience this show, you could feel the energy in the room was like, it was like freaking electricity everywhere. It was awesome. And that was heightened so much so on opening night. I remember opening night being wild.
That was a crazy night. And I had like the best seat in the house for that, because I was like up on the side of the stage, like behind you guys.
Right.
So I was like watching the show from the back and I could see what you guys were seeing. And I was like, oh, okay, shit.
Totally. And it was, I think, just the having the audience and the that kind of like the way the show starts is very ominous and very like,
it's
gonna happen. Divorce. And that, like, that feeling of just before the show, that was one of my favorite moments. When the lights go down, you hear the little ding,
ding,
ding, and we walk on. And, you know, some nights there wasn't any cheer. Some nights there was a big cheer. But the feeling of, like, oh, here we go, was there every time. And, yeah, that never got old in terms of, like, okay, this new group of people, get ready because we're going somewhere. Strap in. Oh boy, miss it.
Right. Let's dive into opening night, because like that was probably that, and I opening night, like the official opening night and closing night were probably the two hypest shows that I think I definitely went to. And opening night had the double standing ovation after I Don't Need Your Love and then the mega six. So what was that like seeing, Tyler doesn't remember, guys.
No, because I remember the big, like there was one night close to closing. I don't believe it was on closing, but we got the biggest standing ovation after, video sings "We Don't Need Your Love." Boom. No, that's not when it was. It was in that little chunk where we all moved to the front.
Yeah.
And we're all standing in a six before. Six wives. That bit.
Oh.
And then we hold that. And we got this, like the applause, it's usually a cheer, but it became this like extra big cheer that at first, and like me, I break pretty easy. I will own it. But it just was so overwhelming because it felt so like, I mean, yes, a huge acknowledgement of the work and of the power, but it was also this like celebration of what this show stood for and the pride of these people feeling like, I guess, overwhelmed with this feeling of, oh my God, this like, yes, yes, this inclusion and this celebration of strength and togetherness and it was that moment sticks in my mind a lot.
I would pay to see just hear that harmony on repeat for like 9 shows like that. Every night I was like, here we go, let's go. Oh, what a time. Where am I going now? During the show, what's your favorite moment to be a part of?
I love, and I actually spoke to Lucy about this, when I had a show where it clicked and I was like, oh, this is literally what the whole show is about. And it's when we're coming back in the remix, in I Don't Need Your Love remix, and we sing, it's not what went down in history, but tonight I'm singing this for me. And it just grows and builds. And it's that moment of like, I had one day where I was like, these women's lives were actually incredibly tragic and awful. And historically, like, we make a little joke of it, like, are you ready for one more song? Well, tough, you know, this is not what happened, and it can't be reversed ever for these women, for these specific women. Like, realistically, historically, their lives and the effects that this circumstance and that King Henry had were very, very, very bad and sad. And to then have this show that has this humongously positive spin and empowering attitude where it's like, well, as Anne Boleyn, like embodying the spirit of Anne Boleyn and being like, hey, I'm taking this back and I'm singing this for me tonight, but also as Carla Gare standing up there, also as a woman standing up there, as an artist, as a human, to be standing up there and saying, these stories have not got a positive result, but that doesn't mean that I need to stand here and that I can't sing and that I can't share an optimistic outlook and a fierce and powerful movement forward. And that line, I was like, oh, delicious. That there is still power to move forward in joy.
Yeah.
And celebration.
That was the coolest breakdown I've ever heard. That was great. Carla just won the podcast, guys. That's it. We're here. This is the last episode.
That moment is so powerful. Hey, beautiful.
Yeah. If you could embody any other queen, who would it be?
If I could embody any other queen, I think, I think I'd want to embody, all right, I'm kind of bending the rules here, but I'd want to embody I'd want to embody Catherine of Aragon, but infiltrate her thoughts so that she then realizes that Anne Boleyn was right. That's what I'm going to do. Thank you very much. I'm going to keep it true. I can't be going around being other queens. What are you talking about? No, they're all great.
If you could turn anyone's costume green, what one would it be? If you had a different style to Anne's out of the 8 others.
Love the Karis's black swing costume. I think that is a tight costume. They're all beautiful, but I remember when Karis came out the first time in her black who is it? I think it actually is her Howard costume.
The one with the skirt.
Yeah, the kind of clear skirt, the choker detail, the long pony. I don't know how I'd work that with the buns, but yeah, I thought that was fierce.
Yeah, Mm-hmm. I love it. Oh. I just want to like keep diving, guys. What's the biggest thing right now that you miss?
About six?
Yeah. About life, Carla. We're not talking about the show anymore.
Suddenly it becomes like black and white. Well, Josh. About six, I miss the humans attached to the show.
Yeah.
I miss that there was such a intimacy, especially, I mean, I'm talking about cast here.
Yeah.
Especially being in Sydney, it became its own bubble. And living at the, a lot of us lived at the Adena where they put us up. So living like really close proximity and just getting ready together all the time and having this real sisterhood of these eight other women was so powerful and beautiful. And I miss that a lot. We still connect a lot. And I believe on this Sunday we'll be seeing
this episode is going to air after the podcast comes out, but you guys should have already seen the Australian reunion that we're going to be part of, because that's going to be a crazy hour and a half. So if you guys were there, you'll know what we're talking about.
I'm excited for that. And also like then inclusive of the team that was attached, like Min and Chippy and Lynn and Nicola and all the wonderful team that helped create the magic that it was. Yeah, and there's so many more that I didn't say.
It was just like from my perspective, like watching everyone come out stage door, it was a completely different vibe. Like you could tell that existed. Like, you could see like even like all the crew and everything, like you could tell everybody was kind of bought in and was in this together, which was just really cool to kind of see that.
It was a real, and I, you know, I don't know how, the word I'm looking for here, but there were no, everyone made the effort to be there for each other and to get to know each other and to, I guess there was a really lovely understanding of, I keep coming back to the word generosity, but it's kind of the wonderful quality that everyone and everything about the show kind of emulated. So maybe it is a bit of a theme that it keeps coming back to. Maybe it's not a, not as random that a lot of like all the band, all the crew, all the cast were so generous with their time and with their empathy and compassion for everybody else.
I think it's definitely something connected to the show though, because it like that same theme is relevant in the Queendom as well. Like it's Toby, Lucy, whoever started that.
Well, you know, got some good values at its center. Got quite a few of those.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Love it. Well, Carla, guess what?
What?
That's the end of the episode, my love.
Whoa!
I know. sad times, but guys, we will definitely catch up with more of the other girls, and I'm sure Carla will come back on at some point when restrictions are lifted. We might do a face-to-face kind of catch up thing someday, sometime soon. We've got to talk about the album. I knew there was something else this whole time. I was like, there's something else. Okay, guys, this is like the most exciting thing I've ever discovered in the last 6 months. And if you have not listened to it, you need to go check out Spotify. The links to these two things are in the description box below. Click it, listen. It is literally the best time you will ever have. Let's start with Love Lead the Way. Chat me through the concept behind this album, because it is literally the coolest thing I have ever listened to.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. That album was born out of, I guess, a year and a bit's worth of kind of potterings away. And Yeah, oh my God, I don't know. It's live, so it's the first gig that I did, so you can hear the excitement and the the flying by seat of pants vibe. But it was amazing and one of the best nights of my life, and to share my music with people, and now for that experience to be shareable continuously is crazy. But I actually do have some other stuff coming out, so keep posted. Woohoo!
You can guarantee, guys, it'll be shared on my social media, so make sure you follow Carter, get it firsthand, and then you'll see it on mine. But definitely my top three songs I'm literally looking at the thing right now would be, wow, it's so hard to choose. Entrance to My House is right up there next to me. And I'd say Umdaya. Probably, I got you. Just listen to the album, guys. Like, literally, just go do it. Click it, go do it. And then there's the single, Chill Please, that came out last month, or July, because this is probably, July. Where did Chill Please come from?
Chill Please was a random tidbit of a song that I had saved on a voice memo, so many of those. And Jack Earl got in touch and was like, hey, I feel like we should collaborate. You posted a beginnings of a song on Instagram. Let's work on that. And I was like, I have something else. Why don't we expand on this? And we did. And it was the coolest thing, because it just happened in terms of all right, a few calls, a few voice memos, a few back and forths. Great, we have a song structure. Great, this epic chorus. He sends me through the choral arrangement. We're recording parts. And then Patch Midley comes on and he's editing all this stuff. And then suddenly this video comes out. I'm like, oh, we've done this. This is what this is. This has become this is a thing. And I think why it was so surprising and then surprisingly successful was because I had zero expectations. I was just like, we're collaborating. This is cool. Jack Earl's a really cool Australian artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. And I read Chill Please. I was like, oh, cool. This is going to be like a chill song. And as it started, I was like, yeah, this is going to be chill. Then it hits and I was like, okay. And then, then it chills out again. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. I see where, excuse you?
You know what? When he first asked to collab, he was like, I'm thinking I want to do real gospel soul. I was like, heck yeah, let's do it. And I sent him that and he was like, yeah, and we'll do this big thing in the middle. I was like, whoa, yeah. How big are we talking? Can we go the full way? And that was kind of the running joke of the song is not chill.
No, and that's great. It's so misleading, but so great. Guys, that does bring us to the end of the episode. If you want to check out any of Carla's individual work, all the links are down below. Click it on Spotify, hit follow, and listen, because literally it's just great. To finish things up, Carla, talk me through stage dooring at the Opera House, because that stage door is it's one of the more unique stage doors in Australia, I think. So what was it like coming out of those glass doors and having, especially closing night with the kind of eruption that happened? what was that experience like for you?
We, the Queendom, were so, again, generous, but again, really understanding of respectful boundaries, I think. We didn't have any, I don't remember having any issues with people being too anything, really. It was such a, and also it never got old. The experience of walking out and seeing these people who have come to see you for the show that you've just done was mind-blowing, in a world that I have never experienced. Except being that person, being the I have been there. So that, to be on the other side of it was whoa. And was full of so much every time. And that closing night was insane. And just, and heightened emotions as well, because it was closing night. But just this, the fans are incredibly beautiful.
Yeah. That's
love you very much.
All right, Queens, that's a perfect note to wrap things up on just before I get too emotional. We will be back next week with an episode. Make sure you check out all of Carla's stuff. Keep an eye on anything new and upcoming. If you can get your hands on it, check out the Aussie reunion, because I'm pretty sure we'll just be kind of laughing or crying for about an hour and a half. But either way, it'll be fun. But yeah, that's it. Guys, we'll be back next week. See you later. Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.